Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
You'll be delighted to know that we again have privacy expert Lance Cottrell to speak with you and explain to us non-specialists what some of those warning signs we see from time to time mean, such as questionable SSL certificates. To review briefly, Mr. Cottrell created Anonymizer in 1995, which was acquired in 2008, and he continues on board with Intrepid as chief scientist. You can find his excellent blog and podcast at theprivacyblog.com. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J, along with my co-host, Jim Nico, the founder, CEO, and VT, visionary thinker, of our parent company, Social Network Intermedia, LLC. Jim, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Jane, and my favorite guest, but don't tell anyone. Please, okay.
Yes, and our always welcome guest, Lance Cottrell. Welcome back to the Social Network Show, Lance.
Thanks so much, Jane. Jim, it's great to be here.
All right.
Okay, now I know that one of the things going on had to do with certificates and so on. We see this from time to time, that the certificate of a website is out of date or something like that. And there was a company that is dealing with airlines, GoGo, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who comes up with these names. But I guess it is appropriate for the travel industry, and that they had certain fake certificates going on. I noticed on your blog, Lance, you had a few canaries there as the image, and I assume that's to refer to the early warning system of coal miners, that the canaries were sensitive to tainted air. Is that what you had in mind?
Yeah, I like the canary in a coal mine. Plus, it looked like they were sort of, one of them was in the middle, sort of listening in on the other two canaries.
Oh.
And that's kind of what GoGo was doing.
Okay, well, tell us about that, and I will stop you whenever I need a definition, okay?
Sure thing. So, quick backstory. What happened here was a Google engineer was on an airplane and using the in-flight internet provided by GoGo, and she went to one of the secure Google sites and saw a little mark up at the top of the browser. So we all know that when you go to a secure website, you're supposed to see a little lock at the top of the browser.
Yeah, padlock.
A little padlock, exactly. And that means that your connection is secure. Well, sometimes what you'll see is a little padlock with an X through it or some other indication that there's a problem.
Mm.
And so she saw that, clicked on it, and when you click on the lock in Firefox or Safari or Chrome, it'll actually pop up information about the security of that connection. Most people don't need to do that most of the time, but it's actually kind of useful to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that little X, that means there's some problem. So she clicked on it and was a little surprised to see that Google's encryption was being signed by an untrusted certificate authority run by GoGo. And so to understand why that's a problem, I probably need to take another step back and talk about actually how SSL works.
Yeah, please. And so, maybe you can include in there whether the HTTPS, we've been told many times that that means it's secure. And so I'm wondering if that's the case, but go ahead.
Well, it certainly is an indication that it's supposed to be secure. So the HTTPS and SSL, the phrases are sort of used interchangeably. SSL means secure socket layer, and HTTPS just means the hypertext transfer protocol secure.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, the idea is that you're encrypting between your browser and the server, so anyone in between wouldn't be able to see it. The problem comes down to, how does your computer know that you're actually talking to Google or Bank of America or whatever server you're trying to connect to? How does your browser know it's talking to the real thing and not some imposter out
okay.
there? So there's this thing called certificate authorities, and this was invented right at the beginning of this. So there are these people who sign your server key, and they do this all cryptographically, but they're basically endorsing it. They're saying, yes, we've checked, and we know that this key that your browser's getting from the website you're visiting really is Bank of America's key.
So a key is simply some code that says it's the real thing?
Yeah, it's the secret. Basically it's the information that's used to do the encryption, to hide the data. And it turns out, so it's a deep rabbit hole here. This is all built on something called public key cryptography, where you have two keys to the lock, one of which locks the lock but can't unlock it, and the other one unlocks it but can't lock it.
Okay.
And so you can give people the locking key, and you can just publish it in the newspaper, and anyone could have it. And then anyone can send you a message that only you can unlock. But then the question is, how do I know that the key that I'm using to lock things up, to encrypt, is really yours? So that's where the certificate authority comes in. It says, this key that's out there that you know you can use to lock up your messages, that's really Bank of America's key.
Okay.
And so your browser has built into it the keys of a whole bunch of these certificate authorities. It turns out that there's a couple hundred of them, and all over the world. And so when you set up a website and you want to have a secure website, you go and you pay them money and they sign your certificates to say, yes, this person really is, you know, the website that you're going to. This is really a bank. This is really, you know, United Airlines or what have you. So what happened here was Gogo InFlight set up their own certificate authority that your browser doesn't know about, and then encrypted the traffic that you thought was going to Google under a key that they created and signed themselves. So they basically said, you know, let's just ignore Google's keys. I'm going to give you a key and tell you it's from Google, and then you'll encrypt to me. And then I'm going to go and encrypt separately to Google using Google's real key, and then I get to see everything in the middle. That's why it's called a man-in-the-middle attack.
Okay. And it's sort of like authenticating yourself, which isn't really, doesn't inspire confidence.
It doesn't. And in this case, they got caught because their certificate authority wasn't trusted. So the browser put up a little X to say, hey, there's something hinky going on here. And she noticed it. Now, they're claiming they're only doing this for efficiency and acceleration and things like that. But they could read all of my bank information. They could read all of my emails. Anything flowing over that network connection would be in the clear to them, which is not really a good thing. And so many people are so used to seeing so many error messages that an awful lot of people just get into the habit of going, it says there's a problem, but I'm going to ignore it.
So it can read everything that you send on that connection, or it can read everything in your laptop or mobile device, or everything?
It's just the communication. So anytime, if you don't have encryption, of course, whoever is providing your network service could read everything that's not encrypted that you're sending over the network.
Okay.
But when it's encrypted, it's supposed to be protected and private, and all they would see is this string of gobbledygook going across the network. But with what they're doing, they suddenly have access to what you're doing. And of course, even if they're not being underhanded about it, if there was someone who managed to hack their systems, the attacker would now get access to everything in the clear.
And in the clear, you mean not encrypted?
Not encrypted, right. So they'd be able to read your passwords and your bank information and everything else that you're sending back and forth.
Okay, so this is one of the reasons why we're warned not to try to do our banking, et cetera, over like a public Wi-Fi or something like that.
Oh, right, exactly, because okay. It's very easy to impersonate other Wi-Fis and do this kind of man-in-the-middle attack on insecure connections. And then there's actually attacks that governments can do, because there are so many certificate authorities out there. If there's one in that country's area, the government can force the certificate authority to issue a certificate for a website that they want. And that won't even put a little Xbox on your browser. Mm. That'll go through transparently, but they still get to read everything.
Okay, so that's something that could be going on. Now, do we know which countries do that, or is it just...
There have been a couple of countries that have been caught doing this. Most recently, there were some Middle Eastern countries that were caught issuing certificates for things like Facebook, so that they could see all the posts by any dissidents in that country and, go round them up.
Okay. Is that anything that the NSA has used in this country, or were they doing something else?
I don't think I've seen any evidence that that we've been issuing those, but certainly any large intelligence agency of a major country would have the capability of doing that kind of thing.
Okay, so when without the man in the middle, or the person in the middle, of course it doesn't have the same alliterative effect. But anyway, those in the middle, if that doesn't exist and it's a straight, a genuine certificate, I'm assuming that whoever encrypted it has the code, the key to the code that's used to encrypt it. So in our next segment, I'd like to ask you that, what is the availability of that information that's being transferred to the person, the actual certificate authenticator, and so on. So if we can continue that in the second half of our show. And we are speaking with Lance Cottrell of theprivacyblog.com. I'm Jane Karwoski with my co-host Jim Nico, and you're listening to The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Back up important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where Jim Nico and I are chatting with cyber privacy expert Lance Cottrell. Okay, so what I wanted to know, I'm dying to know, is if it's a genuine certificate, what is to prevent the encryptor from reading that information that's transmitted? Lance, what would you say about that?
Well, in this case, the data is being encrypted in both directions by your computer for the data that's going out to the server and by the server coming back to you. In this case, the entity that's doing the encryption normally would be your bank. So if you're communicating securely with your bank, they already have all the information on you, all your transactional information, uh-huh. and they're doing the encryption right there in their data centers, you know, at the computers that have access to that information.
Okay.
So it is what they call end-to-end encryption. So it's going from one person all the way through to the other person who's got the other sensitive data, but no one in between gets access to any of it.
Oh,
that's the theory.
Okay. that disclaimer. The way it's supposed to work, and in theory, but so this is why when these big mega breaches occur, a lot of times the companies, the corporations that have been hacked, a lot of times they haven't gone the full nine yards to protect that information. Correct?
Right, and often what's happening is it's not an attack, especially with these big breaches, against your communication with the bank or whoever. They're actually coming in and compromising the bank's own internal network through sort of a back channel attack. They'll maybe send email with malware to someone who works at the bank, or often a service provider to the bank, some third party who helps the bank or who helps the retailer. Compromise their desktop computer, and then once they're on the desktop in the company's network, then they can try to get into, you know, the databases or some servers and work their way in to find all the information. Because it's much better to hack the actual company and get everything at once than try to hack, you know, thousands of individual connections.
Okay. Well, then, to ask a question about these certificates, the authorities say there's over 200 of them worldwide. I believe there's some kind of central body worldwide that kind of doles these out, or how do we know how reliable the certificate authorities are?
Well, that's actually an excellent question. It's a little anarchistic. There isn't actually a central authority that issues these. There are many different companies that issue these kinds of certificates. Some of them are purely private companies. Some of these are connected with the governments in the respective country. And they can even delegate that so that one company that has the ability to issue these certificates can actually deputize another company to issue certificates based on their trust. And then each browser manufacturer, so Safari, Firefox, Chrome, Internet Explorer, Microsoft, they can choose which certificate authorities they think are legitimate, and they include those certificate authorities' own keys built into the browser. And so that's kind of where it all starts, is your browser comes with a bunch of these things built in, and then that's what it uses to check the authenticity of the keys it's getting from the website and so forth down the line. So, in fact, when some of these certificate authorities in the past have been caught doing things they weren't supposed to do, issuing fake certificates, some of the browser manufacturers went ahead, issued an update to the browser, which removed trust from that certificate authority. So now your browser mm-hmm. would throw up a warning and say, this isn't a trusted website anymore, and you get that little X.
Okay, so is this where there's a possibility of the components of our actual computers that are come with the browser involved and is sort of embedded in the ready-made for us, and they are often produced overseas. Is that a possible way of circumventing the privacy?
Absolutely. Because these companies exist in countries where they can be pressured or forced into issuing certificates on demand, and if your browser trusts that certificate authority, then if they issue, you know, a certificate for Google that says it's for Google, for Gmail, for example, or for Facebook, and sign it with that certificate authority, now that government has the key. They can read any traffic encrypted to that key, but your browser will accept it as a completely legitimate key from Google or Facebook or whatever website you're going to. And then they can run that, what cryptographers call the man-in-the-middle attack. So they could, say, sit at the edge of the national firewall, and many of these countries have big servers that monitor all the traffic in and out of the country. They could decrypt the communication from Google, Facebook, Bank of America, whatever, read it, re-encrypt it with their certificate, and send it to you, and your browser would never know the difference. And they can monitor all the content as it goes by. They can modify the content. They could, if they wanted, identify you and insert malware or tracking data that would then infect your computer.
So how does doing VPN, which you'll have to define for me too, and proxies, are they involved in kind of protecting oneself from this and other threats?
They can certainly help quite a bit. So what a VPN is, a virtual private network. And what that means is you are setting up a encrypted connection that protects all of your network activity. So with a website, when it says HTTPS, you're just protecting the web communication to that one website. A virtual private network was designed so that if I've got an office, say, like we do in San Diego, and another office in Washington, D.C., we want to be able to have those networks talk to each other. We can set up a virtual private network. So to our computers, it looks like they're all on one happy network, and anyone who's watching the traffic going between the two cities just sees gobbledygook.
Mm.
And people discovered that you can use the same technology to protect yourself against snooping. So if you're in a country where your government is snooping on you, you can set up a virtual private network, a VPN, from your computer to some server outside of your country. And now if the local government tries to intercept your web activity, they wouldn't be able to see it because that encrypted communication is actually inside another layer of encryption that works differently.
Okay. So another layer of protection there.
Yeah. So that would allow you to protect it. Say if you're in a dictatorship and you use a VPN to send your traffic out to somewhere in the United States or Europe or something like that, that dictatorship would not be able to access your traffic, wouldn't be able to do that man-in-the-middle attack against you. If the attack was being launched at a server near Facebook, however, it wouldn't protect you because it's already left the VPN and going to Facebook. And in that last segment, if the attack happens there, you're still vulnerable. But for most people, their big concern is about something happening in the coffee shop they're sitting in or in their district or in their country. And as long as they can get the communication securely out to some sort of relatively safe part of the Internet, they've escaped the vast majority of these kinds of attacks.
Okay, and to go back to the GoGo in-flight situation, they claimed that they were using a proxy to block streaming video because it took up too much bandwidth. Now, can you just give us basics on that, like exactly what is bandwidth and a proxy and how it blocks something?
Sure. So what they're doing is normally your browser wants to connect and send packets directly from you to, say, YouTube, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And what GoGo wants to do is prevent you from going to YouTube because it sends those files are so big. Email or chat or most websites are really quite small. But video in particular is just gigantic files.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so much data that the airplane can send and receive. It's not, it's like the difference between a modem and, an old dial-up modem and broadband to your business. One's much, much faster. It can carry a lot more data. So the airplane has limited capacity.
So does bandwidth have to do with speed?
It does have to do with speed. Basically, bandwidth is a measure of how much data you can send per time. So it's typically measured in millions of bits per second, megabits per second.
Okay.
And so the whole airplane only has, you know, a certain amount of bandwidth, a certain number of megabits per second that they can send. And, you know, and a video stream might easily take, you know, 5 megabits per second just for one video person that's watching it. And you get a whole bunch of people all trying to watch movies at once on the airplane, and it can be a tremendous amount, and they just don't have it.
Okay, and that depends upon their server or their contract with the carrier? What?
And probably also with whatever kind of radio or satellite link they're using to send the data.
Okay. We, unfortunately, are running out of time for today, but I think that... Do you have any follow-up questions? First of all, we got to keep
having Lance back because the time flies.
Yes.
we just scratched the surface almost. So, you know, I mean, thank you so much, Lance. It's like, again, I'm sitting here kind of in awe of the knowledge, and it's so helpful. And we just want to keep having you back, man. You're the best.
Oh, great. Well, I really enjoy it. And, you know, these rabbit holes are really deep.
are, but you're good at distilling what we need to know and explaining it in understandable terms. So we appreciate your being on a lot. Thanks a lot, Lance.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us today on the Social Network Show. Please put us on your playlist on iTunes or podcast.com. And we look forward to meeting you here again. Please be safe and have fun online and off until we see you again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.